Hello, and welcome to our program, Travel, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Matthew Thompson, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from USA Today here on OWL Radio. Wildflower season is here at Pinnacles National Park. What to know before you go, by Eve Chen. It's the prime time of the year to visit Pinnacles National Park in California. Pinnacles has a stunning wildflower bloom that occurs between February and June, courtesy of the greatest bee species diversity density on the planet, explained Christopher Simmons, West Lead Ranger and Volunteer Coordinator at the park. Over 500 species of bees reside in the small boundary of Pinnacles National Park. Spring visitors are treated to vibrant blossoms in nearly every color of the rainbow. In April, most of the March blooming species are still blossoming, and such species as Johnny Jumpups, Virgin's Bower, Gilia, Suncups, Chia, Black Sage, Pitcher Sage, Larkspur, and bush lupine have joined the spectacular display, according to the park's website. But spring isn't the only time visitors can enjoy the park. Here's what travelers should know about the latest national park in USA Today's year-long series. Why is Pinnacles National Park famous? Pinnacles is known for its namesake rock spires, wildflowers and wildlife, particularly California condors. They were a bird that was on the brink of extinction, said Richard Moore, the park's manager of interpretation and visitor services. According to the National Park Service, as few as 22 California condors were left by the early 1980s, but collaborative conservation efforts have boosted the still critically endangered species numbers. Pinnacles National Park is one place where captive-bred California condors are released to the wild. Wildlife being wildlife, I hate to guarantee that you're going to see anything in particular, but Moore said that your chance of seeing a condor here at Pinnacles is exceptionally good. The park's caves are also popular. One of the largest explorable talus cave systems in the United States is here at Pinnacles, Simmons said. Visitors wanting to experience this should know conditions are rugged. The park's stargazing opportunities are less famous, but nonetheless notable. They are spotlighted in star parties over the summer. We have a really nice night sky here at Pinnacles, Moore said. What is the closest city to Pinnacles National Park? The city of Hollister is closest to the east side of the park. Soledad is closest to the west. The two halves don't connect and offer compelling but separate trip options, said Simmons. The east has the campground and the most photogenic part of the park, the Bear Gulch Reservoir, while the west is day use only and has the best spot for sunsets and moonrises on the lesser known but fantastically gorgeous Pruitt Point Trail. The closest major airport is San Jose Mineta International Airport. San Jose, Santa Cruz, and Monterey are all less than an hour and a half away by car from Pinnacles. How much does it cost to go to the Pinnacles? There is a $30 entry fee for private vehicles at the park. Can I drive through Pinnacles National Park? No. There is no road through the park, which spans over 26,000 acres. For comparison, Yosemite spans nearly 760,000 acres. You can drive around the outside, and that takes about an hour and a half, Moore said. Make sure that when you're putting it in your navigation system, GPS, what have you, make sure that it's going to the south. There is technically a road that runs to the north, but it's not well maintained. It's not a road I would intentionally send anybody on. How long should I spend in Pinnacles National Park? Moore said most visitors spend a day in the park, but avid hikers and rock climbers may stay longer. You definitely wouldn't get the full Pinnacles experience if you were just driving by, stopping in for an hour, he said. There are more than 30 miles of trail at Pinnacles. One thing we've been trying to transition toward is making Pinnacles a park for all seasons for all people, Moore said, offering Pruitt Point as an example. It's not only accessible, it's also just a great view of the park. What month is the best to visit Pinnacles National Park? If we're looking specifically for wildflowers, April would probably be the one, but we're also busier in April, Moore said. On the flip side, he said August is the least visited time of year when temperatures can reach the triple digits. Come prepared, he said. If you're going to the caves, you want to bring a headlamp. If you're going to go up to the high peaks, make sure you bring enough water and snacks with you. Is Pinnacles National Park worth visiting? Yes. But don't expect it to be empty just because it's among America's 15 least visited national parks. You will be sorely mistaken if you come out on a Saturday and it's beautiful out, Moore said. You're probably going to encounter a line of cars trying to do just what you're doing, enjoy the park. With limited parking available, Simmons said that visitors can sometimes wait an hour for parking or be turned away on busy weekends. Monday through Friday, visitors have the caves and condors entirely to themselves, he said. Come during the week and skip the crowds. What native tribes are tied to Pinnacles National Park? The group that would be most associated with the park would be the Chowlin Indian Nation, Moore said. North of here, we have also worked with the Ama Mutsum Tribal Band. He said that there may be other native tribes with historic ties. It is an evolving story. Flying feels different. Here's how air travel has changed recently by Christopher Elliott. If you haven't flown for a while, fasten your seatbelts. I've got good news and bad news. You've probably already heard the bad news because it travels faster than the speed of sound. Airfares are up, so are luggage fees, and we seem to have a problem with in-flight violence again. But there's more to the story, and if you're an occasional air traveler, you'll want to get the big picture. You might be surprised by what you find. First, the bad news about air travel in 2024. Some of the changes have not been for the better. For example, airfares are climbing. Cheap pandemic airfares are history. Average domestic round-trip fares fell to a low of $186 in May 2020, but they were back up to $261 by the beginning of this year, and they will continue to climb. Checked baggage fees are soaring. All of the major airlines have recently raised their baggage fees. On domestic flights, a checked bag may cost as much as $35, more if you wait until the last minute or your bag is overweight. Air rage is back. In-flight air rage hit record highs in 2021, mostly because of masking requirements, but the number of violent in-flight incidents remains high. This time, a combination of fuller flights and a continuing decline of civility, we're on track to exceed 2020's unruly passenger incidents. But don't despair. The air travel experience is changing in small ways, and potentially in big ways. What's it like to fly now? Let's start with the air travel experience itself. Flights are fuller and space is tighter than ever. In fact, if you're flying somewhere this spring or summer, you should congratulate yourself. You're probably part of the busiest year in the history of air travel. Air travel has rebounded, said Jason Bock, CEO of World Via Travel Group. That puts a squeeze on regular passengers. If you booked a no-frills economy ticket, you may face a higher risk of being bumped from your flight. So if you have a little extra money, Bock suggests buying a more flexible ticket. You're still not bump-proof, but at least you'll move up the list. Smile for the TSA. The passenger screening experience is different, but not necessarily better. The Transportation Security Administration has new scanners that take your picture to verify your identity. New technology might allow you to keep all your belongings in your bag and speed up screening, might being the operative word. The process is more inconsistent than ever, said Andy Abramson, a frequent traveler and a communications consultant from Las Vegas. Procedures change from airport to airport. In some cases, all you need is your boarding pass. In others, you need your ID, and in others, nothing but your facial scan. Speaking of technology, many air travelers have raved about new onboard Wi-Fi capabilities. Airlines like Air New Zealand, Emirates, and JetBlue include the price of Wi-Fi in their tickets, and the connections have just gotten better since the pandemic. Your face is your boarding pass. The TSA isn't the only one using facial scans. Some U.S. airlines have started using facial scans instead of boarding passes. It's a little bit of an adjustment for passengers. I stood awkwardly in front of a camera, feeling like a contestant in a dystopian game show, said Chris McGuire, a real estate broker from Birmingham, Alabama. A few months ago, Frankfurt became the first airport in Europe to fully adopt facial recognition. Other airports, including Tokyo and Dubai, also have face scanning technology. If you haven't flown in a while, you may not have to fumble for your boarding pass before you get on the plane. I've used face scanning technology on many occasions, and it usually works, but it can be slow. Getting through customs in Santiago, Chile took a while, and the agent kept apologizing for the technology. So don't forget to pack your patience. No more ticket change fees. Airline ticket change fees disappeared during the pandemic on U.S. airlines. So if you have to change your flight, you won't have to pay a $250 fee on top of any fare difference. That's one of the most significant changes, said frequent air traveler Bob Batchelor, who is the managing director of Flying Angels, a medical transport service. Airlines introduced more flexible booking and cancellation policies, allowing passengers to change or cancel flights without heavy penalties. Batchelor thinks the fees will return eventually, and he's right. If they do, airlines will call them something else, maybe a convenience fee. You may board your flight differently. Some airlines are implementing new boarding procedures, said Andy Palasoy, Vice President of Growth and Strategic Partnerships for App in the Air. The most significant is United Airlines, which last fall began boarding economy passengers with window seats before those with middle and aisle seats. Palasoy recommends avoiding the general boarding mayhem by getting a credit card or earning elite status. Anything that gets you into the first boarding group can save you from having to gate check your carry-on or just getting stuck in a crowd. You have new rights, too. If something goes wrong on your flight, you may find that your airline will do more for you. That's because the Department of Transportation, which regulates airlines, has been applying steady pressure on domestic airlines to improve customer service. After all, taxpayers bailed out the airlines during the pandemic. Airlines now offer guaranteed meals, accommodations, and ground transport to and from a hotel when they're at fault for a cancellation. You can find out all about your rights on the DOT's Fly Rights website. The government is working on carving out more rights for air travelers, dealing with everything from more straightforward and honest pricing to minimum seat size, but it's a work in progress. Flying feels different now. Passengers say it feels like something has shifted when it comes to air travel. Flying feels different, said Robert Kacharian, a frequent flyer and founder of a freight forwarding service in La Crescenta, California. And he's right. It's not just the customers. It's not just that customers have a few new rights or that the technology is getting an upgrade or even that boarding is a little different. There's a sense that something big lies just ahead, with people like Elon Musk teasing a Tesla that can fly and personal flying vehicles making headlines almost every day, there's a feeling that flying is about to evolve in a significant way. Air travelers have become disenchanted with commercial air travel, with its high fares, fees, long lines, and terrible customer service. And the relief may not come from new rules to protect the rights of air travelers, but from a fundamental change in the way that we fly. So if flying feels different to you now, just wait. You ain't seen nothing yet. I will fight for overhead space on a plane, but I shouldn't have to. Cruising Altitude by Zach Wichter. I'll admit it. I will elbow you out of the way just to get on the plane 30 seconds sooner and secure overhead bin space. I'm not proud of it, but I'll probably never see you again, and I really don't want to have to check a bag on most flights. I am part of the problem, but I'm not alone. The bag wars are just heating up. We travel a couple of times a year, about 4 times a year, and we're noticing that we don't have any overhead space for our bags. When people are getting on the plane, they're taking the first space available, Elaine DeCress, a retiree from Minneapolis, told me. The last few times we actually checked our bags at the gate, it was just frustrating. So how did we get here? Why is overhead bin space at such a premium? And what can be done about it? Here's what I learned. Who sets carry-on bag rules? Most flights have a 1+1 rule, one carry-on bag that goes in the overhead bin, and one personal item that fits under the seat in front in economy and on most domestic flights. But these guidelines are flexible and not set in stone. The airlines make the rules. Lulu Lima, founder of the Texas-based travel agency Book Here, Give Here, told me. This is real simple, and every airline has a different rule. That is to say, there is no overarching regulation about what carry-on bags have to be, just that most airlines use similar equipment and set standards more or less the same way. Sometimes you'll hear an agent blame the FAA, but that's not true, said Brett Snyder, author of the blog Cranky Flyer and owner of the travel agency Cranky Concierge. But whenever you fly, it's a good idea to check the details of your carry-on allowance. Lima said each airline has slightly different dimensions for allowable carry-on bags, and different tickets have different rules. Some basic economy tickets might not allow for overhead bin baggage, and ultra-low-cost carriers like Spirit and Frontier may charge an extra fee for carry-on bags. What are the best ways to secure overhead bin space? Unfortunately, there's no great strategy here. The best way to access a bin on most airlines is to be in an early spring boarding group, which usually means having a more premium ticket, having frequent flyer status with the airline, holding the right credit card, or paying for access. I hate to say it, but sometimes I would join a credit card that gets you earlier boarding or buy that early boarding space. It really depends on the airline, Lima said. How can overhead bin space be less competitive? First, a brief detour to look at why bin space is so sought after in the first place. We initially got there when checked bags were still free, but people were primarily concerned with that their checked bag would be lost, Snyder said. When airlines started charging for checked bags, then it became even more important for people because people don't want to pay for it. Lima agreed that passengers mistrusting airlines is a big part of why so many passengers rely solely on carry-ons on their trips. We've all become control freaks to a certain extent, she said. There's no trust that the bag is actually going to make it. Why do you think the air tags and the tiles and all these other things are so popular these days? Airlines are aware that access to bins is competitive and frequently tout improvements. Airlines are aware that access to bins is competitive and frequently tout improvements that mean more space for rollabards. In fact, just on Tuesday, United Airlines announced it was installing larger bins on its Embraer E175 regional jets operated by SkyWest. Regional jets, which typically fly short routes, are notoriously tight on carry-on space. Beyond physical improvements to overhead bins, airlines can't do much to help with the competition, though. Snyder said airlines can encourage or require passengers to gate check their bags, but acknowledge that sometimes backfires, especially if they start forcing checks before the overhead bins are full. And of course, airlines can charge for overhead bin access, which is unpopular with passengers, but it does smooth things along at the boarding door. You have airlines like Spirit and Frontier, and they charge you more to carry on than to check a bag, Snyder said. You don't see that same kind of mad dash that you see on other airlines to get on board just so you can claim your bin space. Yet the efficacy of such practices is somewhat limited. For DiCrease and her husband, Clifford, they're left wondering why airlines don't assign slots in the overhead bin-like seats. And to be honest, I think it's a fair question to which I don't have an answer. Expert packing tips. Until new innovations or some sort of sorcery make overhead bin space unlimited, we're stuck duking it out with fellow passengers for whatever we can get. Lima said that she usually travels with carry-on bags only, and that you can minimize the space you need by being strategic about how and what you pack. I've gone to China and to Finland for 3 weeks, and I've had different temperature changes, she said. I'm all about rolling, and as a plus-sized woman, my clothes are bigger than most, so if I can do it, everyone else can do it too. For Snyder, the best way to avoid the stress is to just determine not to rely on the bins at all. When you travel without a carry-on bag, it is remarkably freeing. You, all of a sudden, don't care when you get or when you board if you have an assigned seat, he said. And I've seen for myself that the checked bag system is increasingly reliable. I'll still fight you for that overhead bin space for now, but I may be coming around to Snyder's view. A book lover's perfect booking. Stay in London's hidden library at St. Paul's Cathedral. Book your book-filled booking. As literary enthusiasts worldwide prepare to celebrate World Book Day, Airbnb unveiled a new opportunity for bookworms. An overnight stay in the hidden library of St. Paul's Cathedral for £7, or roughly $8, hosted by Abby Parker of Book Talk fame. Nestled within the historic confines of St. Paul's Cathedral, the stay offers guests exclusive access to a curated collection of over 22,000 books, ranging from classics to upcoming releases by authors such as Holly Jackson, Kevin Kwan, and John Grisham. The recently restored library at St. Paul's has long been a secret gem of the cathedral, cleverly concealed by the ingenious architecture of Sir Christopher Wren, Sandra Lyons-Timbrell, director of visitor engagement at St. Paul's Cathedral, said in a statement. Some very fortunate guests will now get the chance to delve deeper into the history and wonder of St. Paul's with this truly one-of-a-kind stay. What does a stay at the hidden library of St. Paul's Cathedral include? Upon arrival, overnight guests will ascend the iconic geometric staircase, designed by Sir Christopher Wren, before stepping into the serene ambience of the hidden library. There, guests will be greeted by the Dean of St. Paul's and treated to an immersive literary experience, delving into the pages of captivating novels before indulging in a delectable dinner nearby. As night falls, guests will retire to the cozy confines of the hidden library and wake to a provided breakfast before embarking on a guided tour of St. Paul's Cathedral. As a memento of their stay, guests will receive signed copies of unreleased books from Penguin Random House, U.S. The hidden library of St. Paul's Cathedral is truly a haven for book lovers seeking the ultimate literary escape, Amanda Couples, the general manager of Northern Europe at Airbnb, said in a statement. How can I book a stay at the hidden library of St. Paul's Cathedral? To embark on this literary adventure, guests can request booking starting March 12th at 10 a.m. With a limited number of slots available, this exclusive opportunity promises to enchant book lovers and history enthusiasts alike. For those who are not able to book a stay at the hidden library of St. Paul's Cathedral, there is an Airbnb search filter for creative spaces. Passengers can sort United Airlines flights for planes that accommodate their wheelchair, by Zach Wichter. United Airlines is officially rolling out new accessibility features Thursday that it says will make flying easier for wheelchair users. The updates, which the airline previously announced, include the ability to find flights that are best equipped to handle their mobility equipment by inputting the dimensions of their wheelchair in a filter on the booking page, both on the airline's app and website. The flight results will then prioritize the itineraries with planes that are best able to carry the mobility device. The more we know about a customer's device, the more likely their experience will be a good one, from booking and check-in to the flight itself. Linda Jojo, Executive Vice President and Chief Customer Officer for United, said in a statement, "These new tools and policies also set our employees up for success, especially those working on the ramp or at the gate." Jojo told USA Today, customers with disabilities will also be able to apply for partial refunds if the flights that are best able to accommodate their equipment are not the cheapest option on the route. "Often there are certain types of aircraft that we have where the cargo doors are not conducive to loading the larger personal wheelchairs," she said. The updates come out of a partnership United has with the United Spinal Association, a disability advocacy group. We hope that this partnership continues looking for opportunities to improve travel for wheelchair users. Vincenzo Piscopo, Chief Executive Officer and President of United Spinal Association, told USA Today, "My hope is that they'll continue with us in that journey, taking our feedback as we continue reaching that goal that any wheelchair user has a travel experience as close as possible to the experience that the rest of the community has." Jojo acknowledged that the air travel is not always accessible to people with disabilities and that there is more work to be done. "We're finding the best way to make this travel more safe and accessible to people who are in wheelchairs is talking to people who are actually in wheelchairs," she said. USA Today has reported on how difficult air travel can be for wheelchair users. Over the course of 2023, more than 30 disabled travelers shared their stories of wheelchair damage by airlines. On average, U.S. airlines damage or destroy 10,000 to 15,000 mobility devices every year, about 1.5% of the total number they transport. United Airlines also announced Thursday that it is initiating a pilot program at Houston George Bush Intercontinental Airport to assist passengers whose devices are damaged more quickly. For at least the next 6 months, the airline will make specialized cushions available to install on its loaner chairs if a traveler's personal wheelchair is unusable or unavailable after their flight. The pilot program focuses on the time frame between a customer's arrival and when United returns the wheelchair or provides an appropriate loaner wheelchair if the original is damaged, a statement from the airline said. United is currently testing specialized, adjustable, permobile cushions for loaner wheelchairs at its Houston hub that better match the customer's needs and improve comfort and stability. The airline is also reimbursing customers for transportation expenses should they choose to wait at a location other than the airport. You have been listening to Travel on OWL Radio. You can listen to OWL Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Matthew Thompson saying goodbye from OWL Radio.